Meeting will come to order. Representative Doty, would you like to move the minutes?
Madam Chair, I move to approve the minutes from the previous meeting as written.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Good morning. We're going to start a little bit out of order. We're going to do Dominguez bill first. And if you'd like to come to the testifiers table, we'd appreciate that. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move adoption of committee report on House File 291 with recommendation of pass and refer to the Finance Committee.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you can give me 1 second here, we'll get to it.
Absolutely.
My House Bill 291 is just being passed out with the amendments to it. House Research Clarity is doing a fine job making copies because we need to make those changes. Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. House 291 is relating to the Veterans Home authorizing a certain commissary privileges in Statute Minnesota 20006, Section 198.075. I believe all of you received the new amendment to the bill. We also have some other amendments that just for technical reasons, and I want House Research Clarity to explain that, just that technical in the beginning of this bill, if you would please.
Mr. Cleary.
Madam Chair and members, the amendment, which I believe is in your folders, is simply a technical one. It resolves the conflict between the prohibition in the first sentence and the authorization in the second sentence. And it's the number on that amendment is H0291A1.
Okay. Got it.
Madam Chair, I'll move the A1 amendment.
Representative Morrow moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for clarification, and speaking to the other House members, House File 291 is only for the veterans' home. I wanted to explain that because we don't want to assume that we're doing this for other state agencies. And so we want to make sure that folks understand that the Minnesota Veterans Home employees commissary privilege is just for the veterans home. And I just want to explain that that's, it's going to be just for the home. and now we're not opening up gates for everyone to say, hey, why not me? Why not, you know, why don't we do it over here? I think that it's very important that we do this for our employees at the Veterans Home, the fine work that they do. And I just want to say that I hope that this bill does get passed. I have some folks here that may want to speak on behalf of this bill, so I will turn it over to them. So I'll have them introduce themselves. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, I'm Mark McAfee, representing AFSCME Council 5. We do represent some of the employees in the home. And this bill, as it was originally introduced, was considered in division, and the original language said that these benefits shall be provided. So it was thanks to some of the members of the division working with Representative Dominguez, this change to be permissive, to be may. And we want you to understand that, first of all, we have a number of people that from time to time work a second shift. Sometimes they are required to, sometimes they volunteer to do so, but it's not convenient to folks who may have come to work assuming they're going to leave after an eight-hour day and then may have to work another shift. So the this particular language saying may, first of all, as I would read it, would give management the discretion to provide this if they so would choose to do. It was previously prohibited. Or, on top of that, if in a future state contract, it would allow it to be negotiated as a benefit. Currently, it is not. So, with that, I would stop, answer any questions if anybody had. And otherwise,
are there any questions of the committee, or comments?
Let the director speak. Thank you.
Representative Fowles?
I just want to clarify that, or thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to clarify that last part. So this is not saying that at this point in time it's a done deal. This has to be worked out between the management and the staff as to whether or not this will happen.
Well, Madam Chair, the interim director of the Veterans Home can speak to this, but as I would read it, yeah, that's true. As I would read it, it would be at management's discretion, and he may speak to that, to provide that. As far as it being some, you know, regular benefit ongoing, it would, you know, that might have to be negotiated in a contract. And I think that this simply provides the key thing, and again, we thank some of the members of the division that helped us make that point. We had the hearing earlier. The key point is the existing statute simply prohibited, couldn't do it. And also, we really wanted to make, as Representative Dominguez said, we wanted to make sure the intent is not to open this up to, we don't like, we prefer not to negotiate our contracts through the legislature. We bring them to you, or the administration does, after they're negotiated, and then you consider them and ratify them. So that was not the intent. It's simply to provide, as an option, a tool to deal with this sort of situation. So, thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Madam Chair, if I may introduce myself. My name is Chip Cox. I'm the interim director of the Veterans Homes. We have five homes in the state, as you know, and we care for about 1,000 residents, and we have about 900 employees statewide. And occasionally we need to keep people past their shift to continue caring for our veterans. What this bill does is give us an opportunity to say, thank you for staying and working the extra hours. We know you didn't pack an additional lunch. Can we please provide you a meal? These meals, we have a dietary department, and these would be the same meals that the residents eat in the dining room type of thing. We don't anticipate it being a large number, but occasionally we do need to keep people after their shift, and it would be nice to say, again, thank you for staying. Can we offer you a meal? We're in support of this. It does give us the opportunity. Management has not given away their rights to negotiate this benefit with employees. I think it's a very good bill, and it would be greatly appreciated by the staff of the veterans' homes if we could proceed in this process. Are there questions for me?
Any questions for the committee? Comments?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a point of clarification, currently, you cannot offer this up as far as making the decision on a management basis. I mean, this has to have legislation to be able to do this. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, that is correct. We cannot do it right now.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Representative Faust, do you want to re-renew your motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll renew the motion to pass House File 291 and refer it to the Finance Committee.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The bill is passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Representative Faust, would you move the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate File 255 with recommendation it be passed.
Would you like me to speak about the bill?
Yes, please. Thank you, Representative Haas.
Senate File number 255 is almost a congruent bill to House File 137, and that's what we'll be hearing today. It's for targeted businesses. We have a targeted business law that pertains to women, persons of a substantial physical disabilities, and specific minorities. We're going to add veterans-owned and operated businesses to that targeted group. They can come in with a different set of rules than the other three because they do not have to meet a minority or discrimination rule as per law. This is a grassroots program, a grassroots request. It comes from the MAG, which is an ad hoc committee containing 15 different military organizations and groups. And they've had some businesses that have had problems getting started, keeping started, and when they are called into service, sustaining their business when they come back. So this is going to be...
Could you tell the committee what MAG stands for?
Military Action Group, and it is kind of a group that gets together, and I guess anybody and everybody is welcome. The crowd seems to be gathering. So it's one of their priorities. They go through a big list and say, this is important, or this is important, or this is more important. And ironically, this, or maybe not ironically, but this rose to the top. It also will have, hidden in the weeds, a privately run incubator that will help veterans' businesses get started and sustained and direct them to this program. So that is a possibility of private enterprise joining us on this adventure. I have with me today co-chair Representative Severson, and he will be introducing our guests if you so wish, or do you have questions of me?
Are there any questions of Representative Haas? If not, Representative Severson, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's great to be before the committee today. We've got, I think this is a great potential for Minnesota in terms of veteran-owned business. Some of the challenges that veterans are meeting when they get off of active duty or when they've spent 20 years or 30 years in the military coming into the state is a lot of their training isn't recognized by the private sector. And so I think one of the testifiers you're going to hear this morning is a group called Semper Fi Security, who have been in the military sector working security in extensive arenas, and she'll share a little bit about that. But coming back to the state, because we don't have that recognition of those experiences so much in the private sector, they've had a hard time getting a footing. And this is meant to say, for state contracts and from some of those local contracts, that they have the opportunity to get their business in there and compete with some of the other businesses to try and offset that disadvantage they have when they come in. So if it'd be all right with the Madam Chair, we have Ms. Berlay come forward.
Identify yourself for the committee. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Kim Brule, and I am the Chief Financial Officer for Semper Fi Security, LLC, which is a 100% veteran-owned small business owned and operated by two retired Marines. I've been asked here today to give a brief summary of our challenges of establishing a small business here in Minnesota. I'm a true believer that nothing in life comes easy and you must work to achieve success, but I really wasn't prepared for the year and a half of becoming licensed here in the state of Minnesota. And still the problems we are having marketing and establishing ourselves in the workforce. I'd like to share a few of the following points that outline some of the challenges we have faced and are still facing in our quest for success. I found during the initial startup of Semper Fi Security that there was not one place that I could find that provided me with the steps or the offices that could help me in determining the feasibility and starting of our company. Since then, we found some wonderful websites, but knowing which website and which office to go to first and in which order was a little difficult. A process and would have probably been the best thing that could have helped us out at that time. In the licensing, the lack of transference of military credentials, training, and experience into civilian terms was not easy. It's not easy tracking down supervisors and past duty offices through a military career. Both my husband, I failed to mention that. I am also one of the proud wives of the Marines, and this is why I've persevered over the last year and a half to get this up and running. And we were lucky enough to find one advocate amongst the groups that have been put together to help us through this process and has been a great help. It has taken an unreasonable amount of time, effort, and luck to verify the qualities and the skills and the knowledge and experience that my husband and the other partner have to prove their value to the security sector here. Now as we move into, we are now licensed, insured, and bonded in the state of Minnesota. Now as we move forward to secure contracts, we are having a hard time documenting past performance history. The military didn't give us the contract numbers or the dollar amounts that their work was valued at when they were on the front lines in Baghdad or when they were providing security at the Budapest, Hungary embassy or in Tokyo or while they were on ship providing all the security for the captains that were there. We don't have contract numbers, we don't have dollar amounts, and that's what's valuable to the private sector and even to the state contracts and federal contracts. They want that past performance. We're also having the challenges of getting into the market and competing here in Minnesota with the law enforcement and the retired police officers in the security sector, not in the law enforcement sector, but actually in security. And that's where we're having a hard time saying the security experience of these two Marines is equivalent or even greater than some of the law enforcement counterparts, you know, and we just want to be seen on that equal footing. I guess the only suggestion I can offer is that to find someone who truly understands veterans and respects to know what they're all about so that these retired Marines can come back and do the job that they want to do, something that they can accomplish with honor and integrity. I do want to extend our appreciation to the state of Minnesota and to legislature for helping veterans and in their efforts in making Minnesota a veteran-friendly state. I can personally attest to the fact that veterans are a unique group. They do not seek to be high visible group. They don't want glorified recognition, and they are not ones to pat themselves on the back. But they do need the credit, and they do want the respect for the service and the duties that they've provided in order to transition back into civilian life and into the workforce. Thanks for your time, and if there's any questions, I'd be honored to answer them.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Boulay? Any comments? Thank you. You did a great job.
Great. Thank you.
Oops, not, I'm for sorry. Not for the witness.
Not for the witness. No. Okay.
Okay.
You're safe. Okay. Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hawes.
Yes.
Question on the bill. As I read lines 112 through 114, 15, current law says that the Commissioner of Administration could designate a targeted group if they show that there's a statistical disparity between the percentage of purchase from a business owned by this group based on the representation of businesses of the group members as a whole across the state. So my first question is, has that disparity been documented? I see admin is sitting here, and frankly, the reason... So, and if that's the case, why wouldn't they just do this? Why would we have to put it into law?
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, as I noted in my presentation, there is actually two sets of rules. One of the rules applies to the groups that are so listed. A new rule applies to the military group. They do not have to meet that standard. And maybe we can have a professional witness here.
Well, and Madam Chair, while the witness is coming up, I guess, you know, with all due respect to the veterans, which we all support, but you always have to ask the questions. Department administration and us had a go-around last year with architects in the state. And it was found, I think, proven statistically that rural architects were not getting state architectural jobs. They were going mainly to metro architects, big firms, and our small rural people, because of lack of experience, because of perceived lack of being able to submit the type of jobs they want, et cetera, were being fenced out of this process. So in that case, why wouldn't I then just bring a bill for any group that isn't meeting the statistical mode that they're talking about here in sections 112 through 115. I mean, there's a lot of groups out here, particularly in rural Minnesota, that I think are at a disadvantage when it comes to bidding on state contracts, not only veterans groups, but all sorts of them. So I guess I'm just wondering, is this something we should be putting in law, or is it something we should be working more closely with Department of Administration to correct on a number of fronts?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hawes.
Representative Junkie. I don't disagree with you on those types of standards. And each one that you have mentioned would have to have a legal test. Matter of fact, the groups that are mentioned within this bill are now having a legal test. That test, by the way, was granted, the money for that test was granted by the state, and it's $850,000 to test to see if they meet it. But in my humble opinion, there is a standard that allows the military to bypass that standard that's already been tested in court. And now I will let somebody that really knows the law testify. Right?
State your name for the committee, please.
Thank you. My name is Dorothy Lovejoy. I'm the manager in the Materials Management Division of the Department of Administration. I can speak to the court requirements for statistical disparities with respect to minority and women-owned businesses. There is a standard set by the U.S. Supreme Court for any preferences on the basis of race and gender, and we have conducted disparity studies in the past to determine where those disparities exist in state purchasing, and we currently have a request in this year's budget for $850,000 to do another study. The court does not set standards that high for preferences on the basis of things such as location or disability, or in this case for veteran-owned businesses.
Thank you.
So, again, Madam Chair, and to the administration, why don't you just designate it? Why, you want us to put this in statute? Can't you designate veterans groups as a minority group when it comes to purchasing? That's what Subdivision 5 gives you the option to do.
Representative Severson, I think you want to respond. Or do you want
to? Well, it's to the administration, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative, if you look at line 1.9 through 10, the designation is periodically designate businesses that are majority owned and operated by women, persons with substantial disability, or specific minorities. And that is the only authorization that administration has for designating those businesses. We don't have any authorization to provide preferences in purchasing to any other groups of businesses.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I'm not reading it the same as you, and maybe council can help me. It says a group may be targeted. It doesn't say these groups may be targeted. And I read a group to mean any group. It could be targeted as a if the commissioner determines there's a statistical disparity. Doesn't say these groups that you just read.
Madam Chair. Representative Severson.
And I think to that point, Representative Junkie, the issue being here is this is a consideration in a case where we as the legislature have the privilege of identifying a business or a group that we think is worthy of this consideration, not necessarily through a disparity study, but through the perspective of what was testified here, that we have individuals that are coming to the state after a 20-year career who have unique skills that are applicable to the private sector, and yet we don't have the venue for those individuals to be recognized in the private sector currently. And so what this bill does is it puts that into statute that basically says we understand that these people have special skills, we understand that they've been through special training, and that they need this opportunity to span that gap. When other businesses start, particularly for architects, once they get out of school, they'll make application to go to an architectural firm, and whether that's in the rural or whether that's in the metro is up to them. They make that decision, and then they compete on that basis, and for the next 20 years they establish their business. In the military, once they're done with those their duty in serving their country, they retire. They are looking for a second job. In most instances, they're between 40, you know, 30, 38 to 45, and they're looking for a second opportunity. They come under federal pensions. They come under federal health care, and they have tremendous skills that they want to bring to whatever state they're going to. And this is a great example of where we, as citizens, can say, you know what, we're looking at a delta in terms of talent coming down the road here in 2012 to 2015. We've got huge, massive retirements coming down. And if we don't do something, and I think we all went to the legislative briefing that basically said, we've got to import talent to this state to make that happen. This is part of that bill. This is part of the governor's overall plan to say, look, we're not just saying we're going to reward veterans. We're saying that we need veterans in this state of Minnesota. We need their talents. We need their expertise. We want to make it friendly for the veterans that are willing to come to this state and willing to be part of our communities to do that. And this is part of that package. This is part of the package that says if you are willing to put together a business, we want to consider that business and give you the advantages that we can.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Junkie,
I agree with everything you said. My question is, are we raising this group above other small businesses in the state as far as state purchasing, or is there a better way to do this that would make them at least equal? You stated the problem. 20 years of experience in the military as a purchasing clerk does not translate into 20 years of experience for state purchasing projects. But what this does is not put them on an equal keel. It actually rises them above the other businesses out in the state that are coming in to compete. And I'm looking for a solution or an answer. How can we make them? I agree they should be treated absolutely equal, and that experience should count. But I think you're saying we're moving them above other businesses in the state, not making them equal and recognizing their experience.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hawes.
Representative Junkie. We didn't treat them equally. We enlisted them. They moved to service. Their businesses deteriorated. They were in service. And you heard testimony today calculating a lot of resume that's hard to put together. we set them back with their service. Their service to us put them two steps back. We are now, definitely for this small part, putting them forward. But in my opinion, it's putting them equal because they went two back and one up.
Thank you, Representative Haas, for that comment. Representative Morrow?
Thank you, Matthew Mann. Representative Severson, I'd like to follow up on the comment you just made. I'm looking at the new Subdivision 5, Section C, lines 1.21, 1.22. I'm wondering about the scope of the bill and whether specifically you'd be open to an amendment to limit it to businesses that are majority owned and operated by Minnesota veterans. I'm wondering whether this would open the door to even national companies that would come under majority ownership by veterans and give them as well a preference, or maybe that is the design of the bill itself.
And Madam Chair, I'll let the Department of Administration speak to that.
Madam Chair, Representative,
Lovejoy.
Other provisions in statute limit this to businesses with their principal place of business in Minnesota.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Well, I just want to kind of reiterate what Representative Haas said about the soldiers taking time off from their lives. I think that is a big deal. And I appreciate them doing it. And many of them have injuries or whatever. And I just think that giving up your life for 2 years or 6 years or 10 years or 20 years, they were put in a different place than the rest of us. Do you want to renew your motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move again Senate File 255 with recommendation to be passed.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Madam Chair, the Senate File 255 has been moved to the General Register. Is that the intention of this committee?
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Haas. Thank you very much. Representative Haas, is it the consent calendar or the general register that the...
Please help me. I'm a second quarter freshman.
Register. I mean, we'd love to have it on the consent calendar, but we would want some debate on this, so I would probably move to the general register.
Okay, thank you, Representative Severson.
I would have picked consent.
We'll take it if we can get it.
Thank you. House File 279, is that the... 272, okay. Representative House, would you like to move the bill?
Yeah, I think I'd like to move... excuse me. Oh, excuse me. Too many.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move adoption of committee report on House File 272 with recommendation to pass and to be referred to the Public Safety and Civil Justice Committee.
Thank you. Representative Haas.
Thank you very much. House File 272 clarifies past law. The laws have been, since it was a World War II law that stated in the clarification for state-issued occupation professional licensing and certificates and registrations, for such as peace officers and game wardens, correction officers, those would hold while a person is in service. So when you came back, your licensing wouldn't be gone. These have eroded, and we are now clarifying that they are actually law, and we cleared the law up to that they pertain to some things that people were arguing a little bit with. And those two items specifically were for firearms and force. So that is what the bill does. It doesn't require any dollars. It just states that when a person gets back in service, your past registrations will be there, and you can do updates, but you will be able to go back to work.
Thank you, Mr. Excuse me. I called you Mr. instead of Representative.
Mr.
Will you
Wirtz.
Forgive me? He used to be my boss, you know, so I'm still kind of bowing down.
And what an employee she was.
No, I'm sure I'm blushing. Any questions for the committee? Comments? Representative Stevenson, did you want to speak?
Just to this bill, Madam Chair, and members, that in the recent developments in the recent years, what we've seen is some of our soldiers are coming back, particularly in law enforcement, and because of the annual training required in that, some of them were being pushed to the side and basically said, you cannot join the force again until you receive this training. Basically, what this bill says is it no longer makes any exceptions. It explicitly draws that and says, even for firearms training or for use of force training, those things cannot exclude you from being reemployed. So this allows them to be at least at a desk to be employed until they can receive that training and then get requalified in their position. So it's a good provision.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I renew my motion to move adoption of committee report on House File 272 with recommendation to pass and be referred to the Public Safety and Civil Justice Committee.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The bill is passed. Thank you for that. Now I believe it's House File 279.
That is okay. Correct, Madam Chair.
Representative Haas, would you like to... Representative Haas, would you move the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move adoption of committee report on House File 279 with recommendation to be passed and to be referred to the Finance Committee.
Madam Chair, I do believe that there has been an amendment passed out, which is 279A1. Is that at your desk?
Madam Chair.
Representative Faust.
And Madam Chair.
I move adoption of the amendment A1, please.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Madam Chair. Would you like me to speak to the bill?
Yes, please.
Madam Chair, this and committee members, this bill clarifies and extends what now is termed with that amendment the War Survivors Act. The War Orphans Act was in 1943, but we have amended it now for titling the War Survivors Act. We have extended this to include the child and the spouse. And we have changed some of the residential requirements. It's a last in for $750 education every year for last in comes to state once exhausted the federal. And it is in time of peace, not just war. This is House File 279, and I don't believe we have testifiers on it today.
Did you want
Commissioner?
Oh, yes, please. No, we can't.
And Madam Chair, this was brought by the Veterans Administration as some clarification. I apologize.
Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Dyrud.
Chair, my name is Clark Dyrud, Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. I would like to point out that it's a very welcome change of the name, the War Orphans. The been around since 1943, and it's a welcome change. Currently, since it is a $750 annual stipend to the children of deceased veterans, we have only about 70 people using it a year. And so there's a very small number of people affected, but I think a very important number of people it's affected. To open that to the spouses, I think is, well, as close to a no-brainer as we get. It just makes sense. And as far as the fiscal impact, it would be probably adding 35 people per year. For our department at $750, it would be in the neighborhood of $26,000, which would come out of our state soldiers assistance program, which we also have language for increase in this this year. Also affected would be the Minscu system. It does in effect become a waiver of tuition for Minscu. I do believe we have present someone from Minscu. I do not want to be so bold as to speak for Minscu, but I believe that they are perfectly okay with the impact on their system. And that's all that I have to say. I'm open for questions and also welcome Susan Anderson from Minscu.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Susan Anderson from the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. This is the change in the bill would have a very insignificant impact to our system. Currently, with the people who are using the benefit now, we're waiving about $80,000 of tuition and fees each year. And in our fiscal impact analysis, we just figured it would be about $40,000 per year to add the spouses to this benefit.
Thank you. Are there any questions to either of the testifiers? Comments?
Madam Chair, if I could, I think just when the bill was initially put into effect in 1943, we were considering taking care of the children of the survivors, surviving children of the spouses that were killed in action. And that was kind of in a time when the moms stayed home and there was that ability to do that. Now with the way things are, mothers are typically going into the marketplace, and this gives them the edge that they need to be able to make that transition. And I think it's a bill whose time has come.
Thank you. Representative Foth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to remove the adoption of committee report on House File 279 with recommendation to pass and be referred to Finance Committee.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The bill is passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome, Representative.
Madam Chair, lady.
We're gonna. You gonna. Move the bill, Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move adoption of committee report on House File 451 with recommendation to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee.
Thank you, and welcome, Representative Yarros.
Thank you, Madam Chairlady and the committee members. Boy, you're efficient. You're working fast here. House File 451 was discussed pretty thoroughly in Representative Conan's was a division or subcommittee, and the bill authorizes the funds and the Adjutant General and Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to pay certain soldiers and veterans service organizations that provide honor guard service at the funerals of deceased National Guard members and veterans. The first section authorizes the attorney, the Adjutant General, to activate members. I think that's old law. And then the second section, Honor Guards, Veterans, authorizes the Commissioner of Veterans to pay up to $50 to a local unit of congressionally charged veterans service organization for each time that the unit provides an honor guard detail at the funeral of a deceased veteran. I, Reverend Mary Murphy and Reverend Norris and I and perhaps some former legislators attended a funeral of one of our former colleagues last fall, and it was just great to see the honor guard there and the volunteer EMS people and so on. This was just super. We had a real discussion, emotional discussion in the subdivision. This is something that Wisconsin is doing. I know it does cost a little bit of money, but that will be discussed in President Junkie's committee, Chairman Junkie's committee.
Are there any questions of Representative Yaros?
Madam Chair, just a comment.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Yaros, you know, we haven't had a lot of questions for the testifiers here today because all the bills that come forth, in my opinion, make such common sense. You know, our veterans, they risk so much, they sacrifice so much, and yet they ask for so little. So, you know, I don't want to speak for everybody, but speaking for myself, you're just taken back out of respect. And again, it's just common sense legislation. I thank you for this, and I look forward to listening to the testimony also in Chairman Junkie's committee. Thank you.
Thank you, and Chairman Representative Hamilton. Yes, that's true. They shouldn't be struggling. They have all kinds of fundraisers, you know, spaghetti feeds and so on, which is, you know, but they shouldn't have to, you know, spend their money on gas or, you know, the least we can do is help them a little bit. Because a lot of these are disabled. I rode with them, with the three Honor Guard members to Duluth a couple of weeks ago. One of them is the Iraq wounded veteran. He heads the Honor Guard at Duluth. He's only 30-some years old, went to high school with our son, and he's taking 19 pills a day, and the way he described it, it was just awful, and he only got 20% disability. He can't, you know, he can't work, he said.
Representative Morrow?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I just have a question on line 1.12 of the bill where it says, Commissioner of Veteran Affairs shall pay within available funds, and then the appropriation is Section 3. Is there a possibility that even if we pass this legislation that there might not be available funds? I'm wondering why those three words were included.
Madam
Chair, it's a possibility, of course, if we don't. You know, you'll have to ask the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs and the Adjutant, you know. They don't have money.
Madam Chair.
Representative Morrow.
So even if this bill goes through, there may not be available money.
Probably it won't get through if there's no money.
Well, I remember in committee, in Kunin's committee, that some of us were so emotional we couldn't even respond to say thank you to the testifiers.
Yes. No. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I remove my motion to adoption of committee report on House File 451 with recommendation to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Bill is passed. We have to refer to where are we Veterans Division. Okay, I should have known that. So we're referring. That sounds funny. House File 1157, PAS, Support Our Troops. House File 142, Wardlow, Property Tax Refund. House File 1065, Otremba, Health Screening Benefits. So, is there any other business? If not, committee's adjourned.